Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation, the number one show in our time slot on KXL. We've got Jason Schumacher from Hometown Hearth and Grill. We're talking about, you know, kind of really some maintenance issues with this. Your gas grills, but it can also be with your regular charcoal grills and stuff. One of the things I've noticed over the years is that, you know, people dump charcoal briquettes, you know, whatever they're using as a heat source in there. And they may have a fairly good sized hole in the bottom of that thing because they didn't clean it out at the last fall or whenever they used it, the last tailgater or something.
Right.
And they start to fire it up and all of a sudden stuff's falling out the bottom.
Yeah, that's usually just the metal deteriorating with leaving the salt and the grease and the leftover barbecue sauce on the metal.
These people that leave their grills on the back porch, and we'll just use that as an example, when they come out and you were talking about, you know, won't start in this, but sometimes there are problems with actual burners and them or the regulator knobs and different things. How do they kind of whittle that down to know that that's really what it is?
Best thing to do is just kind of go through it. So try to tell people to go through it at the beginning of the spring. Make sure you do put it away clean. But then when you do barbecue, if you don't barbecue a lot and you let it sit throughout the winter, open it up, try to light it, see what's working, what's not working. And just start making really a list of what you need on the grill. We have all sorts of replacement parts. I mean, we have replacement parts for all grills out there, mm-hmm. whether it be a burner, a hose and regulator. We do custom lines as well. So pretty much can fix any barbecue out there for the most part. We stock a lot of it. We might have to special order a few things, but just go from there. Best thing to do is just bring it in on hand, you know, because you're going to replace, you're going to have to take it apart anyways. Bring it in-house with you. That way we can look at it, measure it, get you the right size and the right equipment to get it replaced.
You know, most of the gas grills have a grease tray in the bottom, but there is grease around in the basin of the grill. What's the best way to get rid of that? I mean, you can't really just crank it up and burn it out because it doesn't leave.
Right, you can't. I mean, if you've had it and it's built up that much, you really just start taking apart, and I use it's almost like a degreaser. It's a barbecue cleaner that we carry at the shop, and that's what we use. You spray it on there. The longer you let it sit, the better. You can hose it out when you're done, and then just a little bit of elbow grease, get down there and clean it and start fresh.
Do you ever have to take a pressure washer?
No. you probably could, but we don't know how it works.
I did when we had the ranch, because we had a lot of different barbecues and different things for what we were doing. And a couple times in the spring, I opened it up and went, oh, that's not going to work. So,
right. So
instead of even trying to fire it up, we just kind of took it apart and pressure washed it out and got it pretty clean and then let it dry out for a couple days.
Right.
And it worked fine, you know.
Yeah, no, that's key. I mean, there's a lot of times we do barbecue repair as well. So we'll have people that bring something in that's had, you know, grease or sauce on it for, looks like it hasn't been cleaned in 2 years. When it's that bad, we actually have they call them weed burners.
Like
a blowtorch. A lot of roofers use them.
We
use that to clean it off with. It just, you know, incinerates it.
The in-grill thermometers, how accurate are they?
They are accurate. The biggest complaint I find with people is they say, well, I put a thermometer on the side of the tub, and they read different thermometers or different temperatures, which they will. I mean, mm-hmm. wherever that probe's at, it's going to read a different temperature. Even an oven in your home is going to have hot spots, and you know, depending on where you're getting the
sure.
the readout at. So, you know, usually it's within a few degrees. I mean, it's nothing. You're not talking a 30 degree difference.
But. Right. Well, I know as a cook that, and I've told people this for a long time, is if you don't know your grill, and it doesn't matter what the manufacturer is or anything, every grill is going to have a hot spot. And I know some of them say, well, no, they don't. They don't. But after a period of time in using them, even the real high-end ones, they will develop areas that, you know, are warmer or cooler like that, and it just happens.
I mean, that's just the nature of cooking,
yes.
of the beast, really. Because, like you said, it doesn't matter what grill it is, whether it's charcoal, gas, you know, pellet, there's units that have a little bit more heat distributed a little bit better than others, but you're always going to have a hot spot somewhere. I mean, you know, it's you can't get around it.
Yeah, see, I'm a big fan of the second rack.
Right.
Like that, because the types of meats and stuff I usually work with, I like putting them up there. So, you know, on the bottom rack, they get a nice little crust on them type
sear.
Thing. Nice little sear, yes. And then you can put them up there and you can adjust them, move them back and forth. I'm not opposed in the cooking to moving stuff around the grill. I know some of the diehard guys, this might not, you know, fit in their wheelhouse because they're like, put it on there and leave it. You know, I don't like them. I'm not messing with them, but if I see one that's getting, say, tri-tips or something, and one's right. getting a little more done than the other one, and I'm serving, you know, 20 or 30 people at one time, I'll adjust them on that grill because of the hot spots and stuff.
Well, sometimes you're going to have to.
Yeah.
You know, or if you can leave it, but if it's in a hot spot, it's going to be burnt or a little overdone than what you anticipated.
Yeah, it's going to have a little more than a nice crust on it. It's going to have a sole.
Right.
a tennis shoe type sole.
That's it.
By the way, before we go to break here, I wanted to get your opinion on this. Seems that the folks at Google just unveiled in the Rework Deep Learning Summit in Boston last week, and if you don't know what that is, look it up, cuz I don't care. They're developing an app that's able to analyze a picture of food. So you can now take just a picture of your food, and that app will analyze the caloric value of that. There's no sampling. There's no anything like that. And it's all done through the pixels and an algorithm. And if I wanted to know that much about algorithms, I would have taken advanced calculus in college. You know, but I find that really, because they're very worried about, okay, obesity. But did you ever notice that the people that like carry around the food apps and stuff, they're usually the skinny people that have the recyclable containers when they go to the grocery store, and there's usually carrots sticking out of them. Not like us with a big hunk of beef.
Right. Well, you know, actually in the last couple of years, I've seen a lot more people coming in that will have pictures or taking pictures of food and say, mm-hmm. you know, what machine can I get or what barbecue can I get to produce this?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of amazing.
Takes more than the machine.
It does.
Yeah.
Practice.
We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes with our buddy Curly Schumacher from Hometown Hearth and Grill. Don't go away. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation on the Radio Northwest Network. Anybody remember when the Eagles, because that song's Victim of Love, were the warm-up band in the Memorial Coliseum for Joe Cocker? I'm dating myself, but that was about 1971, somewhere around there. Yeah, that was it. That's the first time we saw him. Glenn Frey walked out and said, "Hello, I'm Glenn Frey, and we're the Eagles from Los Angeles, California." And they just started playing, and the place went like, whoa. And that was it. And then Joe Cocker came out and could barely stand up. So
great band.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. By the way, before we get back to talking to Curly here, a little news. Chimps, monkeys. Seems like they like cooked food, except they can't cook it. You got to work on that, Curly. You got to figure out how to get a get a barbecue for chimps because they can't control the fire. It says chimps have all the cognitive abilities necessary to you for uniquely human behavior of cooking, but they don't do it in the wild because they never learned how to control the fire. Aside from that, according to the study published last Tuesday in the journal Proceedings of the Royal Academy B, chimps' brains are pretty much fully equipped to take on great culinary leaps like human beings do. In fact, given the choice, some of the chimps would actually put down raw, like, potatoes and eat cooked potatoes and stuff. So I know some of the people that I've worked with over the years probably be easier to work with chimps. Don't know, in the kitchen, I mean.
Sometimes it would be.
Sometimes it would be like that. Also, this is our little grilling at the green segment because you all know that by now how much I like golf and I like doing charity work. The 10th annual Portland G-Man Shootout over at the Reserve Vineyards and Golf Club in Aloha. This is Tuesday, September 1st. And this goes to support the FBIAA, which is the Federal Bureau of Investigation Agents Association. And the proceeds of this tournament, and I've played in it now for about 5 years, I guess, goes to for widows, orphans, or widowers from agents that either died or were killed in the line of duty when working for the FBI. And they've raised a lot of money. There's about 8 of these across the country, and they've raised a tremendous amount of money. So you can actually go to the FBIAA website, which is just that, you know, .com, and check it out. We're going to post this on our website, but it's out at the Reserve. That's a great course. Have you ever played out there, or do you play?
I do play golf. I haven't played that course, but I do love golf.
Well, you have to put a team together and go out and play in this tournament. Now that I know you play golf, you're stuck because
we'll get together on that.
We like to play some golf there. Back to barbecue maintenance and how to take care of them. Pellet stoves, pellet, you know, Traegers, Max, whatever. Green Mountain Grills. What should people be looking at when they're firing that thing up for the first time?
Usually when they're firing that up, there's you really want to check the pellets, make sure that the pellets haven't swelled up or gotten wet.
Right.
The biggest thing on a pellet grill system is wet pellets. They pretty much turn into concrete and it binds up the auger. So if you check your hopper, make sure there's good fresh pellets in there, you're good to go. You do have to, depending on how much you cook, you will have to take the insides out and, you know, vacuum out. Usually take a shop vac and vacuum out the ashes and the belly of it. But other than that, I try to clean mine about every month.
Yeah?
Yeah, I cook a lot, though. So.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Did you know that Traeger's moving their operations to Utah?
I have heard that they were moving. That is
true. I actually talked to somebody inside of Traeger yesterday, and they might not like this announced yet, but they are moving their operations. I think they've already had some of the corporate stuff there in Utah for a while, but it seems to me that they are, according to insider trading, you might say that they are moving because they're, you know, they've had a facility there in Wilsonville now for a while, the assembly and distribution. And
yeah, once they sold out and to an outfit in New York, and I think they've sold a second time since then. They had moved from Mount Angel. And,
yeah.
Not sure where they're at now. I heard through the grapevine that they are moving out of state.
Yeah, they are going to Utah. That I can tell you like that. So when you're doing, you know, pellet grills and you're making sure the pellets aren't swollen or damp or anything like that. Anything else though that people should be looking for there? The, you know, ignition systems, do they need checking on a regular basis? Or
they don't really need checking. I mean, they're actually a pretty simple system. I mean, it's either lighting or not lighting. I know you just got to keep it clean. You want to keep the firebox clean out of ash,
mm-hmm.
Or it won't light. A lot of times the pellets will drop down and there's a little hot rod in there. That's what lights them.
Sure.
So if there's full of ash, it's lighting, you know, the pellets are dropping on top of the ash and it doesn't get lit.
It's just like a pellet stove in your house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Same concept.
We have one of those in our home, and it's tough sometimes. I forget to go clean out the little fire, you know,
right,
bowl and stuff. And so then I get reminded that it's cold. So anyway.
You get reminded pretty quick.
Yeah, you do. So in your, Jason, what do you prefer, gas, you know, pellets, wood? What do you like to do?
All depends on what I'm cooking. Yeah.
I
cook mainly on pellet for convenience, but if I'm doing competition, it'll be charcoal wood.
Now, one of the complaints about pellets is they can't get it to 500 degrees for a sear. Some of the companies say they can. Then when you read the blogs, they say they can't. And I'm always a little suspect of people, because usually blogs or postings are for people that are complaining.
Well, it depends on what system you have. There's several different pellet companies out there. There's now over 30 pellet manufacturers in the United States. So there you have high end, low end, different price points. There is some units out there that do have the direct sear, Memphis being one of them. Mm-hmm. We have on the floor that they call it a direct flame flavorizer, where you put this insert in there and it's directly above the fire. So you're actually cooking like on a charcoal grill or, you know, an open fire. So you do have the possibilities. There's units out there. It just depends on which one you pick.
I don't have one because I have, you know, gas and I have a Primo, actually. It's not an egg, but it's a Primo, and I really like that. And then I have an old smoker that I've had for probably 15 years. I don't think it cost me $150, and I've drug it around everywhere, and it's great.
Offset smoker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
great little units.
It's just, you know, they just work phenomenal about that. But I think it's all about your personal preference.
Personal preference and what type of food you like, and really just what you want to get into. I see a lot more in the last 5 years with the barbecue network, having barbecue shows,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people getting more than one unit now. Just biggest thing is just go out there and have fun. There's no right or wrong way to barbecue.
No, there isn't. I mean, it's just whatever suits you.
Right.
You know, a couple of recipes I'm going to be putting up on the website for you is my little version of how to grill a ribeye, which is, of course, all you health nuts out there. I put butter on it at the end and make it sizzle. And then tomato with bacon and feta. Or we actually call it bacon, feta, and tomato. And it's a half a beefsteak tomato with some feta cheese and it's a little horseradish on it, and that type of thing. It's really good recipes. All right, we're going to take a break here at the Great Barbecue Nation, and we will be back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Jesse James was a lad that killed many a man. He robbed the Danville train. Let that dirty little coward that shot Mr.
Welcome back to Barbecue Nation with me, JT, right here on the Radio Northwest Network. Say hi to a couple of our affiliates really quick, KPNW down in Eugene, and KACI in the Dalles. Thanks for being with us here on the Nation. Before I bring our next guest on, something really quick here. You know, I'm kind of a news junkie. Prices, this is out of Washington, by the way. Most of the stuff I'm going to bring you over the years is going to be out of Washington because that's where they write all the really interesting stuff that, you know, you have trouble digesting. Anyway, prices at the wholesale level rose at the fastest pace in nearly 3 years in May, pushed higher by a sharp jump in the cost of gasoline. Go figure. We know that. And a record increase in the price of eggs related to the outbreak of the avian flu. But outside increases in the volatile food and energy costs, core inflation remained moderate. I don't know how they can ever tell us that, because the two things they don't put in inflationary numbers is food and fuel. So anyway, it's egg prices have surged 56.4%. So that doesn't, eggs don't really have anything to do with our next guest, but it, food and agriculture does. Will Homer is the chief operational officer of Painted Hills Natural Beef, based in beautiful Fossil, Oregon. And full discretion here, full disclosure, Will and I know each other very well, and he's one of the top operators in the cattle business that I know of. So let's welcome him to the show. Hey, Will, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you today, Jeff?
I'm good. So tell us, why is beef so expensive?
Well, it's there's so many factors. This business is, I believe it's the most complicated business in the industry, any industry out there. It just has so many facets. But really, it's expensive because we've been in a race to the bottom. We've been in a race. Consumers over the years have been in a race, been told not to eat as much beef, to cut back on beef, and the producers have answered that, and they've shrunk, and the industry's shrinking, and now we've hit the bottom. And 2014, the demand for beef was up 13%, and it just shocked the entire industry. We're in this shrinking mode, and demand is up 13%, and so all of a sudden everybody wanted it again. And it's a slow-moving industry. It's not fast-moving like chickens and like pigs.
Yeah,
are fast-moving, and they can turn quickly. But beef is very slow to turn. So the ship's still trying to turn.
Well, and you're right. It's a big industry. It takes a lot of time. I mean, if you just think of it from the pure biological sense, the gestation period on cattle is not like chickens. You know, you can't just all of a sudden automatically, you know, another 100,000 head appear here in this region and that region. So the cost factors involved, you know, people talk to me a lot every day about food, because I'm in the food business, if you will. But they go to the grocery store and, you know, they look back and they say, God, I remember a year ago, this top sirloin was $4.97 a pound. And now it is, you know, $6.25 a pound or something. I mean, the numbers are inconsequential here. I don't know how the consumer can actually get their head around what causes that. I know that you guys aren't making any more money on the per head of cattle.
Right. That's right. What's happening in the beef is probably a reflection, is you can just basically mirror what happens, has been happening in the cattle industry, in the growing industry. You know, 40 years of history has had the prices of cattle, whether it's a cow-calf guy growing calves or a feeder stocker guy with older cattle or whatnot, they've been kind of stuck in time. And you know, prior to 2003, it really was, you know, cattle traded, fat cattle for packers to purchase, traded 80 cents and below, and it was stuck in time. And so they could present the same price of beef, stuck in time, $1.99 hamburger, just ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk every year. And we finally hit this point where in our industry, calves prices have exploded. Even just looking at them today, we're still looking at them going, what is this? Because there's not enough to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And all those prices are relaying up the system through the feeders and through the packing and through the beef and right on out on the street. And it's been slow to get to the street. It's been slower than, like I said, 2003 kind of marks that hinge point, that change point where it started to climb and we started to see increases. But right now we are kind of in the worst of the worst. It's, you know, the industry's trying to make a change, but it takes cattle out of the system to make more cattle. So that even accentuates that shortage process.
How do you ever get the cattle industry to match or even be, let's say, just 1 year behind the current trends. Trending meaning for a while was, eat a lot less red meat. You got to eat less beef. You got to eat more chicken. Now it's come back around full circle. And they say, you can eat some more steak. You know, you can eat some roast beef or whatever. They don't want you eating 5 pounds of it a day, but they don't want you eating 5 pounds of chicken a day. And I've never figured out who they were anyway. But anyway, so how can you, how with an industry like the cattle business where you're actually having to grow an animal, you know, how do you, I mean, I guess that's why people in the futures markets make either vast sums of money or jump off of very large buildings, because I don't see how you can balance that.
I'll be honest with you. The only way they can balance is it with dollars. And last year I read a lot of articles from those folks you're talking about back east or wherever, and they actually used a term that I'd never seen before, but I learned a lot about it this year, and that is rationing. They are rationing the beef to the consumer through price. And that's scary. That's like, what? They're doing what? But if you think about it, it's the price. There's not enough animals to go around. And so instead of just having an empty case, I'll sell you a $1.99 hamburger all day long, but only the first four customers that come in the door can actually get it. They sell it for $6.99 now.
Right.
Because it's rationing. They have to pay the packer more because they have to get their hands on it, and they have to pay, and the packer has to pay the feeder more to get their hands on it, and the feeder has to pay the cow calf guy more to get their hands on it. And that's really what it's come down to. And it'll come back. It'll either they'll write a book and say beef's no good for us, and all of a sudden the price will go down, or the consumers I actually feel like they're speaking right now, and it's slowing up. It's getting tougher. So
I find that kind of interesting, because you get premium cuts in the grocery store or your butcher shop or wherever, and the consumers are saying, okay, we want leaner hamburger. We want this is where some of the grass fed stuff comes in, but that's a discussion for a whole nother day. You know, but they want this, so they want leaner meat. They don't want the marbling, blah, 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 blah. And then pretty soon that kind of fades away. The practicality of using leaner hamburger is there, but as far as, you know, grass-fed beef and other things like that, but then you've got all this excess. So they want grass-fed New Yorks, and they want, 90%, in their burger or in their grind, and you want a filet that's, you know, what have you, whatever you want to describe it as now, but you've got the whole rest of the carcass to deal with. And, you know, being the time of year and stuff, people don't want it. So that's another problem for you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, as a packer, I hate to use that term as myself, but that's the world I'm in now. Harvest natural cattle and sell natural beef. And with each animal, it comes with every piece. We don't get the choice of the piece of the season. And every season has a different piece that's in the limelight, as you're alluding to. We go to Christmas and we have Christmas prime ribs. And we come around here to June and we have a nice New York steak on the grill.
Yep.
Well, those are two nice pieces of meat that are in the what we call the middle of the carcass, along the back, the loin. You hear guys talk about the loin. I want the loin. Well, the rib, the strip, the top sirloin, and then the tenderloin underneath make up that segment.
We got to take a break, but we're going to come back and pick up that middle meat discussion right after this on Barbecue Nation with JT. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation with me, JT, right here on the Radio Northwest Network. Coming to you today from KXL in beautiful downtown Portland. A couple little things really quickly. If you've ever traveled, I know you will find absolutely nothing to question about this next piece of information I'm going to give you. A federal inspector on a routine visit to the food service facilities at LAX in January found conditions that, and she wrote, could compromise the safety of food meant for airline passengers. Oh, the horror. Also said bathrooms where the employees washed their hands were dirty. Machines used to control bacteria were not adequately maintained. And clutter in the food storage area created the potential for pests, according to this inspector from the FDA. And, of course, the union said they needed to support that, getting it cleaned up. LAX is where several catering operations are owned by an outfit called the Flying Food Group. And it seems that they had very unsanitary conditions in several of their kitchens. Now, they don't just service United Airlines, which this story I didn't tell you was focused on. They service Delta and a few other ones. So I don't even know why they had to do that. I could have told them that without – they could have saved their money is what I'm saying. Also this weekend we've got the McKinney Springs barbecue up in Prosser, Washington. They've got a $7,000 grand prize up there. We're going to welcome back Will Homer, who's the COO of Painted Hills Natural Beef, located in Fossil. We were talking about middle meats, and if you don't know what middle meats are, just picture a cow and kind of look in the middle. I guess that's the simplest way to say it, wouldn't it be, Will?
Well, when I look at a cow, I see a big belly, and we don't get anything out of the belly. So,
yeah.
But you're kind of there. You're there if you look up on that loin. You know, I hear a lot of guys, all you hear, you know, you grew up hunting deer and the backstrap. Boy, it's a backstrap. Well, it's kind of all the same. It's up along the back there. You've got. So, yeah, talk about middle meats. That's the delicious part. That's the grilling part.
But what do you do with the rest of it? I mean, we've got 4th of July coming up in a couple of weeks, the biggest barbecue day of the year, actually. Burgers, you know, burgers and dogs, of course, sausages, whatever, they're just rampant on the 4th of July, and it's on Saturday, so it'll be basically a 3 to 4 day weekend for people this year. So they'll be grilling more than once.
Yep.
And
Father's Day, we just got done with Father's Day, and they have ribs and T-bone steaks for Father's Day.
Yeah, and so you've got all this. They're going to be doing a lot of grilling, but you don't see them grilling a lot of round steak.
Nope.
So, what give us an economic lesson really quick here in the cattle business. We were talking about, you know, seasonal meats, okay, and Christmas, you got prime ribs, you know, Father's Day, Mother's Day, you've got maybe some steaks or what have you. Summer, you've got burger. But when you think of round steak, I kind of think of things like roasts or stews or, you know, comfort food in the fall. So the economics of that going into the summer, what happens?
You know, seasonality it really kills you as a processor of animals. The whole animal has every piece every week. And so you don't work from frozen beef. So in the middle of summer when you're hot for all the middle meats, the end meats have to be discounted, have to be kind of moved at discounted rates, and sometimes you're just kind of a price taker. Please get it gone. Please get it moved. You can't afford to keep it in the freezer. Takes a lot of dollars to put meat in the freezer. It stacks up in a hurry. You can't afford to do that. So you just play the seasonality game. You get into, remember, and I'm going to go back to Christmas just because I know it's a long ways from now, but in my industry, it means so much, and it's so easy to look out and say, "Yeah, we got Christmas prime ribs for December. Where are the chuck roasts? You got to hide them. You got to make them go away. And then January 31st, you want a nice chuck roast to warm up around the oven with. And where's the prime rib? Well, you're working to make it go away. And those are the parts that are really devastating to the industry, and why. You know, some people look at the price of a strip loin and they, oh my God, they're making tons of money. Well, it's the other parts you make go away that often are hurting you worse than anything.
Sure. We're going to wrap up this week's show. Will Homer is going to be back with us on next week's edition of Barbecue Nation. So we're going to continue that discussion. But for this week, we've got to get out of here. I hope you all have a good weekend and enjoy that sunshine. Barbecue Nation is produced by Alpha Media. In association with JTSD Productions, all right reserved. Copyright 2015. Can you figure that? Barbecue Nation is produced by Court the Hitman Johnson. Research by Dogbone Lee Larson. We'll be back next week with another edition of Barbecue Nation. I'm your host, Jeff Tracy. Keep your hands out of the fire, but enjoy grilling out there. We'll talk to you next week.